This is the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Joining me on today's program momentarily, Mr. Michael Pento, president of Pento Portfolio Strategies. Also joining me on today's program, Mr. Jay Taylor. He is the host of the radio program, Turning Hard Times into Good Times, and he is also a newsletter editor. We'll get both of their takes on what's going on in the equity markets of late and get their forecast for what might lie ahead. Let me remind you that if you're not yet a subscriber to our weekly newsletter titled Your Portfolio Watch, all you have to do to subscribe is visit the website yourportfoliowatch.com. The website again is yourportfoliowatch.com, and we'll be glad to sign you up for a free subscription. I'm pleased to have as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Michael Pento. Michael is president and founder of Pento Portfolio Strategies, a money management firm. Michael hosts a podcast that we'll talk to him about, and we'll spend some time talking to him about his most recent book titled The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Dennis.
So, Michael, the title of your book is rather ominous, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. What's the premise of the book?
Well, the premise of the book, and it was written about 2 years ago, is that the amount of debt that exists globally, and we're talking about debt that has increased $60 trillion since the end of the Great Recession in the summer of 2009, means that we're going to have an epic bond market debacle. Prices are going to plunge and yields are going to soar. And I use Japan as one of my typical examples. You have a country in Japan over a quadrillion yen in debt, debt to GDP at 250%, astronomical when it comes to a sovereign nation. They have a central bank, the Bank of Japan, that is hell-bent on creating a 2% rate of inflation. And if you just take those factors in isolation, you would say, well, you have an insolvent government, cannot have the revenue to handle debt service payments. You have a falling population, a perpetual recession, an inflation target of 2%, and a quadrillion in outstanding debt, quadrillion yen. What would the interest rate be to loan this government money out for 10 years? And you might say 7% or 10%. And the answer is it's 0.22%. That's 22 basis points. That's about a fifth of 1% to loan this insolvent nation money out going out 10 years. That's a very negative return after adjusted for their goal of a 2% inflation target. So who is loaning this government money? And the answer to that is the Bank of Japan. The Bank of Japan is buying all this debt. So the answer is that once the Bank of Japan, and this, by the way, holds true for the Fed, the People's Bank of China, the European Central Bank, all central banks are in the same game. Once they achieve their inflation targets, these central banks are going to be forced to stop buying bonds and start selling bonds. In the case of the Federal Reserve, we have $4.5 trillion balance sheet that ballooned from $800 billion prior to the start of the Great Recession in December of 2007. So once they start selling bonds instead of buying virtually every bond issued, you are going to have a massive interest rate shock, a spike in interest rates, plummeting bond prices, not just on the sovereign level, municipal level, junk debt. You see that happening already today. And when you have a nation that has a debt to GDP over 100%, in the case of the United States, we have $19 trillion, 18.9 to be exact, trillion dollars in total debt outstanding. The nation cannot support the level of debt. Their debt service payments outstrip incomes, outstrip the revenue, and you have a complete economic debacle. That is where we're headed down the road. That's the big, big bomb that's going to hit international sovereign states probably in the next few years. We're having currently a lot of distress in markets, but this is just a warm-up act, unfortunately, to what I see coming. And it's not something I hope for. It's not something that I'm looking forward to. This is something that is going to happen. It's the result of mathematics. It's the result of real economics, and it's brought upon ourselves by allowing a group of central bankers and governments take control and usurp the entire authority of free markets.
So, Michael, that's a very scary thought. Let me just ask this. When this bond market collapse happens, we've already seen commodities collapse. We're seeing the beginning of you know, what's likely a pretty significant move down here in equities. How will our average listener be affected? What will this look like?
Well, you know, Dennis, for the third time, unfortunately, since the year 2000, the 401k statements are going to be opened up and see a 1/2x number. They're going to lose 50%. It happened in 2000. It happened in 2008, and it's going to happen again in 2016. This is the result of having an artificial economy that was created by central banks and governments, borrowing and printing massive amounts of money. So there has been no real recovery. If you look at real earnings, they have gone nowhere. Real inflation, after inflation, median earnings have been going down for decades. If you look at the labor force participation rate, it's the lowest it's been in decades. We have no real recovery. What has the recovery been? The recovery has been in asset prices. And this is the avowed, averred strategy of central bankers. They told you this. Mr. Fisher told you this not too long ago in a recent interview. I've known it for many, many years. The Fed's strategy, and not just the Fed, like I said, all central banks, their strategy was to purchase a tremendous amount of long-term debt, taking interest rates down to record lows, putting real estate prices back into a bubble. And by the way, they are back into a bubble. If you look at home price to income ratios, they were 4.4, 4.5 in the height of the housing bubble. Guess where they are today? 4.12. We're almost right back to where we were. Home price to income ratios have risen so high that first-time home buyers are shut out. They cannot afford the down payment. If you look at the stock market in relation to the economy, 110%. It was 120% before this recent drawdown in equity values. But the average of that ratio is usually about 72 to 73, going back decades. So why is the total market cap to GDP at 110%? That is because central bankers try to re-engineer bubbles. They were successful. We've got a massive bubble in equities, in real estate, and an unprecedented bubble in fixed income. And that fixed income, that spectrum goes from high-yield debt to municipal bonds to sovereign debt across the entire fixed income spectrum.
So bubbles inevitably burst. And what's your take, Michael, on why a former Fed governor like Richard Fisher, whom you just mentioned, would come out and say, you know, essentially he said, we knew we were creating a bubble. Why would they pursue that policy? Is this just kick the can down the road?
The reason why they pursue that policy, Dennis, is because they are deathly afraid of deflation. And the reason why they're deathly afraid of deflation is because when you have so much debt outstanding, the number one enemy to this debt is deflation. So if incomes go down, it makes the value of that debt much more difficult to repay. And let me just touch on debt, because a lot of, I call them Wall Street carnival barkers, but you know, if you listen to the talking heads on in the mainstream financial media, they'll tell you that the economy has deleveraged. And this is simply not true. So in nominal terms, household debt reached $14.1 trillion at the height of the credit crisis, $14.1 trillion. It's back to $14.1 trillion today. So households have not deleveraged one penny since 2007. But here's what happened since 2007. Business debt was $10.1 trillion. It's now $12.6 trillion. The national debt has gone from $9.2 trillion, the total national debt, $9.2 trillion to $18.9 trillion. The Fed's balance sheet has gone from $800 billion in 2007 to $4.5 trillion. We've had a massive re-leveraging of the economy. There has been no deleveraging. If you look at China, China's debt is up 28 times, not 28%, 28 times since the year 2000. And why? Was it debt that was engendered by savings and this savings was lent out to the private sector to create productivity gains? No. It was the red communist megalomaniacs in China directing a fixed asset bubble, which is now popping, and that's why you see deflation pervading across the globe. So we have a real problem with debt. We need, and this is the mindset of central banks, we need inflation to get incomes and asset prices constantly rising so people can retire and the government can pay back that debt. It's a dangerous game. It's not going to work. But, you know, we're not going to have a solvent pension plan on the planet if they can't get the stock market up 10% about every year. And by the way, the stock market hasn't gone anywhere but down since QE ended, quantitative easing ended, in October 2014.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today is Mr. Michael Pento. Michael is president of Pento Portfolio Strategies, and we'll continue our conversation with him when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tuberg, and I have the pleasure today of chatting with Mr. Michael Pento. Michael is the president of Pento Portfolio Strategies. You can check that out at pentoport.com. And also, Michael has a book that is an important read. It's called The Coming Bond Market Collapse. We've been chatting with him about it. And Michael, just to kind of jump in where we left off in the last segment, you know, I've always had the take that Thomas Jefferson was right, that if the American people ever let the central bankers control the issue of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, they'll essentially destroy the country. That's a short paraphrase in the interest of time. So what's it going to be, inflation followed by deflation? Or are we going to see deflation?
Well, I got to tell you, that's the trillion-dollar question that you just asked. And the answer to that question, and by the way, it's the basis of Pento Portfolio Strategies, is the answer to that question is both. We're going to have both. And that's not a cop-out, it's just the truth. We're going to have both. We had a run-up of inflation, especially in NASDAQ stocks in 2000, that burst. We took interest rates to 1% for 1 year. We built up the housing bubble. That credit crunch collapse. We had massive deflation. What did the Federal Reserve do? Ben Bernanke, then Fed chairman, took interest rates from the interbank lending rate down from 5.25% to 0%, and that engendered a whole new wave of inflation. Oil went back from, it was 130, then it went to 33, went back to $114 a barrel. And the problem with this yo-yo of inflation deflation, which I think we're going to suffer under for quite some time, it just doesn't work. It destroys the purchasing power of the middle class, and you can't keep inflation up where they need it to be unless you have constant intervention in quantitative easing. So, for example, when Ben Bernanke took interest rates down to 0%, and now the current chairwoman of the Fed, Janet Yellen, took interest rates from 0 to 25 basis points, guess what? The next round of deflation, which we're obviously in right now, and let me just spend a couple of seconds on that. The CRB index, which has 19 commodities in it, is at the nadir of the Great Recession. In fact, it's all the way back to the levels reached in 2002. Now, it's just not oil. We're talking about all energy. We're talking about all base metals. We're talking about even gold and silver. Why are these base metals, energy, and precious metals priced down to where they were in 2002 in nominal terms and lower than that in real terms? You know, oil's at an all-time record low in real terms. Why would that be? What is that saying? We didn't all of a sudden discover oil and copper and iron ore and aluminum. We didn't discover. There weren't some huge discoveries that happened in the last few months. These prices are collapsing because demand is collapsing worldwide. It's pricing in the coming collapse in demand. It's pricing in the coming wave of deflation, which is what Pento Portfolio Strategies does. We're invested to profit from deflation. That's why we're short and have been short high yield. We have been short the Russell 2000. We've been short stocks on the NASDAQ like Tesla and Twitter and Yelp. currency and making money. We have a lot of cash. We have a little bit of gold as protection against this coming chaos. But here's the point. Let's just say that come March, when it comes time for Janet Yellen to raise interest rates for a second time in her tenure, and by the way, it'll be the second time the Fed raised rates in a decade, she can only take back the most she can do is either raise, she can either raise rates, which I think would be highly untenable at that time, or she could take back the 25 basis point, one quarter point rate hike. Now, taking back that rate hike doesn't exactly solve the problem of global deflation. Like I said, China had 55% of their GDP was investment, building non-productive fixed asset bubbles. You know, bridges to nowhere, airports that can't land planes, empty cities. Taking back a quarter point doesn't exactly engender inflation. So what I think the Federal Reserve and all central banks are going to do is directly monetize government debt. That's going to be the next big thing. I don't think central banks are going to lay down and play dead. Now, it's against the law for the Federal Reserve to participate directly with Treasury auctions. They have to go through and use the banking system as a conduit. However, what if that law was changed and we can run trillion-dollar deficits and have the Fed directly purchase that debt? That is what I think is where I think we're going to end up. It won't be this year. It might be next year. But simply launching another round of QE and taking away the quarter point and going back to zero is not going to solve this deflation. So if you don't have a model that models the spectrum, the dynamics between inflation and deflation, you are going to get whipsawed and have your purchasing power destroyed. Your retirement savings will become destroyed.
And we have 2 minutes left in this segment, Michael, but very quickly, if they pursue that policy, if this law is changed, doesn't that mean the U.S. dollar's days now become numbered?
Well, I think, Dennis, as soon as the Fed changes monetary policy. So right now, the Federal Reserve has something called the dot plots, where they tell you where they think the Fed funds rate, that interbank lending rate, is going to be at the end of 2016. And they have four more rate hikes priced in. That's the median level of the Fed funds rate, so about 1.5%, 1.25%, 1.5%. That's going to be the range of the Fed funds rate. So, I mean, I just don't think they have a chance of getting there. How could they possibly raise rates into what I think is an obvious deflationary recession? Look, you have, as I mentioned, the CRB index at the record lows. Business inventory to sales ratio is spiking. If you look at the junk bond market, that is telling you a recession is absolutely on the way. We have a recession already in manufacturing. And the stock market is at, if you look at many metrics, if the cyclically adjusted P.E. ratio, the Q ratio, median P.E. ratio, total market cap to GDP that I mentioned prior, price to sales ratio, this tells me that this coming stock market debacle is going to take the S&P 500 probably down to 1,500. And that's only, if it takes it down there, we're going to still be at 15 times trailing earnings, which is the average. So you have to have a dynamic investment strategy. And I have to tell you, if you subscribe to the modern portfolio theory of investing, putting 60% of your assets in stocks and 40% in bonds, and that ratio varies depending on your age, you will get destroyed because stocks and bonds, for the first time in history, are both set to plunge.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there, Michael. Been a pleasure chatting with you today. Love to have you back. Our guest today has been Mr. Michael Pento, Pento Portfolio Strategies. You can check it out at pentoport.com. And Michael's book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse, is must reading. And Michael, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dennis.
As I close this segment, let me remind you that if you're not yet a subscriber to the Portfolio Watch newsletter, it's easy to subscribe. All you need to do is go to the website, yourportfoliowatch.com, And give us your name and email, and you will automatically be signed up for your free subscription, and you'll get our market and economic update in your inbox every Monday. I'll be back with Jay Taylor momentarily.
Give me your money, just give me money.
Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. Glad you're listening today. Joining me in just a moment, Mr. Jay Taylor. And if you'd like to go back and listen to any of our guest expert interviews, all you have to do is visit everythingfinancialradio.com. They're posted there every week. I am pleased to have as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Jay Taylor. Jay is the editor of Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks newsletter. His interest in the role of gold that gold has played in U.S. monetary history led him to research gold and into analyzing and investing in junior gold shares. He also currently hosts his own two-hour weekly radio show, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I have been a frequent listener to that program and do enjoy it. Jay is also a frequent guest on CNBC, Fox, Bloomberg, and BNN, and is also a speaker at many mining conferences. And Jay, welcome to the program.
Well, I'm pleased to be with you, Dennis.
Jay, let's talk a little bit as to your take on the economy and what your outlook is, and share with the listeners why you have that view.
Well, I wished I could be more positive as we enter this new year, but I must say that I think the seeds of destruction have been sown into not only our economy in the United States but the global economy. You know, I'm an old enough guy to remember when I was a young man, we still had a international monetary system that was backed by an honest money, namely gold, which could not be created out of thin air. And so when you had an honest monetary system, it sort of controlled how you were more careful about how you spent your money and how you allocated capital. Now, since money can be created infinite amounts of it, digital money, without any backing, what we've done is, I think the global economy has extended itself way beyond what it's able to, way beyond the solvency point. So the monetary system, it's not only that gold isn't backing it or silver or some asset-backed money, but the fact is that we have a system in which it is multiplied out of thin air. As I say, we have a fractional reserve banking system. So if you put money in the bank, the bank can create, maybe depending on the reserve requirements, can create 10 times more money out of nothing. And if you put no limits on the amount of money that can be created, what happens is you create more and more debt, because whenever someone takes a loan out, they are helping to create the money, increase the money supply. So money is multiplied through the fractional reserve banking system that allows loans to be made. Well, if you look at a chart, especially since the early 70s, but more recently it's been growing exponentially, you'll see that debt is growing almost straight up off the page. And I'm talking about all debt, not just national debt from the government, but corporate debt, individual debt, so forth. It's growing exponentially in recent years, whereas income, if it's growing at all, GDP, is growing in a very slow, linear manner. So what I see is a global economy that is becoming ever more insolvent, and the policymakers don't know what to do about it. The only thing they do know to do about it is to do more of the same. It's a little bit like a drug addict that in order to get to avoid the withdrawal pains, he has to increase the amount of drugs that he takes constantly until, of course, at some point in time, it is life-threatening. And I think, honestly, I believe that's where we're at. I hate to sound so dire, but I don't think that the policymakers, if they have a clue, the problem is it's too painful. I mean, much as if you know to get off of heroin, you've got to go cold turkey, nobody wants to do it. I think that's where we're at. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see here. I see Larry Summers coming on saying that we should not have increased rates. It was saying that before we did. Now we're seeing a major pullback in the equity markets globally. And it's going to be really interesting to see if the Fed, if the Fed chickens out here. But because I think it's going to be very difficult if they don't start to print money again. And it's going to be difficult ultimately anyway. But But what we're seeing is, you know, all kinds of games have been played in order to try to keep earnings per share up, to keep the stock market up. You know, massive amounts of money put into the housing sector after 2008, 2009 through Freddie and Fannie. And the banks, of course, have been just given a gift, a lot of free money. And in fact, the banks are being paid when the Fed increased the rates the other day, the banks were actually being paid even more not to lend money, to hold it in their balance sheets, from 0.25% to 0.5%. So the policymakers and the Federal Reserve, we have to realize, is owned by the banks. It's not there to take care of the American people. It's there to take care of the banks. The wealthy banking establishment is really what is behind this. And so you can rest assured that unless there's some sort of major political change or something happens, that basically the banks will get bailed out and the individuals will be stuck with the tax burden. And that's what's happening. And now I think what we're seeing, I think we're approaching the limits of this game. And I think the equity markets, which have been held up dramatically by this easy money, are coming under pressure. And of course, what I think is really telling also is the fact that the commodity markets have been in a very significant bear market since 2011. That because the real economy is suffering. And, you know, Wall Street's had a party, but the real economy around the globe, and especially I think starting with China where there's some huge problems, you know, I think we're in big trouble. I really do.
Well, Jay, if you're just joining us, we're chatting today with Mr. Jay Taylor. And, Jay, you know, when you talked about debt levels and the fact that debt levels have grown exponentially, I can't help but think of the parallel of the Great Depression, which arguably was brought on by debt you know, monetary policy in the 20s that
sure.
led to bubbles. Are we going to see a similar outcome? And we've got about 3 minutes left in this segment.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very likely possibility. I'm going to have on my own radio show next week, Mike Mahoney, and he and Harry Dent recently did a video that I saw in which they're calling this the greatest crisis in the history of humankind. Well, I hope they're wrong. I mean, I can hope and pray they're wrong because nobody wants to see this sort of thing happening. You know, some of us that have been gold bugs, have owned gold ourselves, are being accused of wanting to see a catastrophe so we can profit. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. What I have done is purchased real money, honest money, as a safety measure, and I don't know that that's going to be enough. But it's important to realize that the fundamentals are flawed. The basic fundamentals upon which our economy and our monetary system have been based, or have been, the foundation is just flawed, and it's that's the problem. So I think excuse me, we have far more debt relative to GDP now than we had in the 1930s. So yes, I think the quick answer is something like that, or something worse could happen, unfortunately. And so we have to try to do the best we can to prepare for that.
And Jay, if you look at Fed policy and the fact that they've created money out of thin air, as you've talked about, you know, it seems there's only one of two outcomes, as one of the founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson, said, we're going to have deflation or inflation followed by deflation.
Mm-hmm.
If the Fed prints again, where are you on the future of the U.S. dollar? And we do have a couple minutes left here.
Well, the U.S. dollar is, you know, it's as long as it remains the world's reserve currency, that is the go-to as a safety. You know, that's where the money is seeking a safe haven. So it's going to U.S. Treasuries. The big question is, you know, how long will the U.S. dollar remain the preeminent world's reserve currency? And that, I think, is open to speculation. The dollar could remain strong this year as long as that's the case. And as things get weaker, because when you think about it, the dollar, the money supply, is based on loans that are created. That's how it's built up. That's how it's puffed up. Well, when the margin clerk calls and you have to sell and pay back the loan, then you have to sell whatever you're able to sell and buy dollars, and that creates upward pressure on the world's reserve currency because it's not only a safety haven, but also because that's where most of the debts are, where a large number of the debts are. So I think the dollar could remain strong until it doesn't, and what could cause it to change, it's very difficult to know, but we do know that the BRICS, Brazil, Russia, China, India and South Africa have been very unhappy about the existing system for some time, which is based on, again, when Nixon took us off the gold standard in 71, it's based on fiat money, or I say it's fraudulent money because there's nothing real about it. But we've used it to expand the military-industrial complex to the United States, and NATO has used it to expand its influence around the world and to change governments and to impose our will on people around the world. And there's kickback against that now, very strongly from Russia and China primarily. And so, you know, they're setting up their own system, and China has imported huge amounts of gold. And China and Russia are now starting to trade with gold. Russia selling its oil to China for gold. So they are, it's just really difficult to know. But when the system breaks, it's all based on confidence. And one thing that policymakers have done through the major bullion banks is to trash the price of gold through massive amounts of paper shorts. And so the real price of gold, we don't know what it is. We only know what the fictitious price of gold is that we are given to the COMEX and the LBMA. But we know very definitely that that is not a real price, an honest price for gold. You know, if Wall Street starts to think that gold is actually better than the dollar, then the game is over, and the dollar will be trashed. I don't want to see that because I know it's going to be extremely painful, but I'm just saying that eventually, you know, Pinocchio's nose protrudes far enough that we start to understand the truth, and when the American people actually figure that out, or when the global economy understands that, and some people do, then it will be game over for the dollar, I'm afraid, and it won't be a happy time for those of us who live in America.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today is Mr. Jay Taylor. Jay is editor of Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks newsletter. He also is the host of Turning Hard Times into Good Times, a two-hour weekly radio program. We'll continue our conversation with Jay when Everything Financial Radio continues. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. I'm going to get right back to my conversation here with Mr. Jay Taylor. But first, again, let me remind you, if you'd like to re-listen to any of our interviews with our guest experts, you can do so at everythingfinancialradio.com. I'm pleased to be chatting today with Mr. Jay Taylor. If you're just joining us, Jay is the editor of Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks newsletter. Jay is also the host of the two-hour weekly radio program, Turning Hard Times into Good Times. You've probably seen Jay on CNBC, Fox, Bloomberg, or BNN. And Jay, we were chatting on the show here previously about the future for the U.S. dollar. And would it be fair to say that as the dollar continues to weaken, that that will be bullish for gold?
Yeah, there is that inverse correlation between gold and the dollar because, you know, as I say, the dollar in the minds of people have replaced gold. And, you know, it's interesting to note, I remember my son was in the eighth grade a few years back, and his teacher was telling him that the dollar was still backed by gold. So people think that it is, but it's not. And, so what we've seen is this enormous amount of money that was created that could not have been created if there was a gold standard. And going back to 1971, the reason Nixon took us off the gold standard is he wanted to be able to expand the empire and to print money and do social programs and prosecute the war in Vietnam without raising taxes to pay for it. So it was a dishonest way of financing a growing government, an expanding government. And of course, since then, it has really, really grown exponentially. And so there's an inverse correlation there. And, you know, the point is that gold is an asset-based money. The dollar and all the other fiat currencies around the world are debt-based monies. And so the dollar is good only so long as people can repay their debts. When the system becomes insolvent, the dollar ultimately will lose its value. Now, initially, it starts to gain value as the world's reserve currency. The senior currencies in these major deflationary episodes always gain value because they are the most indebted currency. So, as I was just explaining in the earlier segment, that when when the margin clerk calls, you have to sell whatever you're able to sell and go out and buy dollars to repay her back, to repay the banks or whoever you owe the money to. And when that happens, then it causes an upward bid on the senior currency. But when the system itself collapses because it's insolvent, then there's going to be another alternative currency that's put in place. Now, if we're smart, if the policymakers actually submit to the realities of the four-dimensional world that we live in, they will go back to gold and silver, gold and or silver, or some asset-based money. Otherwise, what you have is this ability to create endless amounts of money, which are meaningless. I mean, imagine if you had a yardstick, and every year you took an inch off of it and still call it a yardstick. Well, that's what we've been doing with the monetary system. Dollar is not a dollar. As somebody said, a barrel of oil is a barrel of oil, an ounce of gold is an ounce of gold. What is the dollar? Well, it cannot be defined because there's no definition to it. It's whatever. It's a figment of our imagination, which is why the con artistry from the policymakers and from the Federal Reserve speakers and so forth is all about trying to keep us conned into accepting a monetary instrument that is intrinsically worthless.
Well, Jay, when you go back historically and look at the track record of fiat currencies, there is a 100% failure rate. And as you were talking, Weimar Germany, John Law's France are just a couple instances that came to mind. And almost every time a fiat currency fails, a new currency is put in place that has some type of tangible backing. Do you see that happening again? And if you do, what countries would be likely candidates to maybe lead the way?
You know, that's very difficult to say. It should be us. But, who's importing enormous amounts of gold is China. As a matter of fact, I think that Zimbabwe now recently, which had this, a current hyperinflation country, has now attached its currency to the Chinese yuan. But China has far more gold than the West is acknowledging. I have no doubt about that, based on the work of various people. They actually have a division of their army is devoted to increasing their gold supply. They've had that for many, many years, and they're the largest gold producer. And so they are already saying, okay, if the IMF doesn't want to let us have a fair representation in the global economy, we're going to do the best we can anyway. And Russia and China and others have set up their competing system that at least whether it's not formally based on gold yet, but as I noted earlier, the Russians are selling their oil to China in exchange for gold. And the Russians have been increasing their gold hoard very dramatically as well. So India as well, one of the other BRIC countries that has a penchant for the people do for owning gold and silver. So the basis for a new monetary system, and I suspect that the BRICS could be the ones that lead the way, but it won't be an easy transition because, like spoiled children, the West has really enjoyed its ability to create money out of nothing and use it to buy goods and services that are provided by places like China. The problem is, of course, now the Chinese economy is breaking down and the West is so indebted that it can no longer afford to buy the things from China. So we have, the 2008, 2009, the housing debacle was created by the credit, massive amounts of credit that expanded the system until it choked. And now what have they done to try to fix it? More of the same. And we're now, though, starting to see the housing sector, at least the housing stocks, the home building stocks, start to really take a tumble. And I think that could be the first sign that we're in for another, unfortunately, probably in for another housing problem, and maybe as severe or worse than the last one, unfortunately.
Well, Jay, I certainly agree with you. When you mentioned commodities earlier that have been in a bear market now for over 4 years, mm-hmm. We're starting to see equity markets break down. I certainly think that the real estate market will follow. What would be your advice to an average investor? Is gold the best place to be in your view?
Well, I think owning some gold certainly makes sense. But I would say before that, get as close to being debt-free as possible. Build up some cash in U.S. dollars because we don't know how long the dollar is going to persist as the world's reserve currency. Right now, one does quite well by selling stocks and just holding cash. if you're not shorting the market, at least you can do that. And I would say then have some gold and silver bullion in hand. But I think, you know, beyond that, if times get really difficult and the system breaks down, having a trade, having skills that you can use to sell to people to generate some income, you know, try to find ways to have income in the worst of situations. Maybe owning some real estate that's cash producing in the right conditions in the right parts of the world, that might work well or might be very important. I think making friends with people, having a community, a sense of community where you can come together and work and live and help each other out is very important. And I think also, you know, from a spiritual point of view, I think people need to be ready and aware of how they're going to deal with things when and if things break down. But I think, you know, knowing, you know, owning gold certainly and silver, having some coins and that is certainly important to have. And if you're able to afford more larger bullion accounts, that's good. I definitely write and talk about and analyze gold mining companies still. They've been in quite a bear market. I think we may be coming to an end of that. I'm encouraged by gold's performance now in light of this equity market meltdown that we seem to be starting. Gold has been, you know, it's very interesting. 2008, 2009, the real price of gold went up dramatically relative to the commodities and the cost of getting it out of the ground. So the gold mining companies had a couple of years up through 2011 that were just stellar in terms of earnings. So I think something like that could be in the cards. The shares are really cheap. They're out of favor right now. So I think if you've got some extra cash, buy some good quality gold mining companies. I'm just writing in my monthly newsletter about a few of them that I think are probably the best and safest to own, that have upside potential, but also can weather this storm if it continues to go down. And companies that have to go out and raise equity in this market in order to expand their projects or to even get them into production are not really the kinds of companies you want to own. But those that have cash flows that are producing gold at low prices of gold, their cost is very low, and that have some extraordinary exploration upside potential that can be developed using internally generated funds, those are the kinds of companies that I really like to look at right now.
Great. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest today has been Mr. Jay Taylor. Jay is the editor of Jay Taylor's Gold, Energy, and Tech Stocks newsletter. And Jay, if someone wanted to learn more about your work, what would you have them do?
Best place to go to is Jay Taylor Media, JAYTaylorMedia.com. And there they can learn about my radio show as well as subscribe to my newsletter.
Well, I'd encourage the listeners to do that. Jay, been a pleasure chatting with you. Love to have you back.
Likewise. Thank you very much, Dennis.
Thank you for joining us. Well, that concludes our podcast for this week. Hope you got something you can use, and we'll be back again next week. Talk to you then.